Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I mean, I would add just 2 alumni people from Boy Blue as a good example. One who didn't have those dancing skills, and his name is Mukta. He went on to choreograph 2 Super Bowls, the most recent ones you've seen.
No way.
And one other alumni, and he couldn't dance before. He's someone that came in, got taught, and he's taken it. He's done, you know, he works with Cirque, and he's taken it to that whole other level. And then, yeah, Cynthia Erivo. She obviously had mad talented, as you know. Yeah. But that's someone who worked with us and danced with us so much so. It was in the most recent interview that they mentioned about the opportunity they got from her for her ability to do movement because she had trained with us.
Welcome to Roundhouse 360, a podcast taking you inside the Roundhouse 360 Festival. I'm Emmeline, a resident artist here, and in this series, we're giving you a front row preview of what's coming to the Roundhouse in Camden, through conversations with the artists, performers, and curators shaping the festival. Each episode is a sneak peek behind the scenes on what's coming up, what not to miss, and what makes this lineup, this space, and this moment so special. Today, I'm joined by Kenrick Sandy and Michael Asante, 2 innovators, changemakers, and hip shakers within the UK dance scene. Together, they give home to Boy Blue, a powerful London-based dance company whose commitment to multicultural community storytelling will be gracing our very own stage this April. Whether you've already got your ticket or you're still deciding, this is your chance to get the inside scoop. Let's get into today's episode. So I maybe wanted to start by just asking you a little bit if you could both tell me about your personal relationship to the Roundhouse. Do you have a specific memory of maybe either being in the building for the first time or seeing something on stage that really stuck with you?
You know, I'll start off with something that really stuck with me coming to the Roundhouse, and a cheeky little plug for another friend of mine, but Barbershop Chronicles. I think I got it right. Yeah. That was my mate Inouye's piece. Just seeing it kind of housed here, because I saw it at the National, but seeing it housed here, it had a different vibe. That's the one thing about the Roundhouse you get in terms of how it's spaced and how it's, you know, I guess it's history. It's about community in a roundabout way, both on the inner circle and the outer circle. Absolutely. In terms of everything it does. But, what do you call it? Fusa Baruta. I came to watch Fusa.
Just about exactly. To say. Oh, that was my
Fusa Baruta was the one that stuck with me as a piece that I came to watch. And you know that at the end of the piece, what? Not the first, it was their first piece, not the second one, because I did come to watch that too. But when they had the mosh with the rain, the rainwalk, I jumped right in. I was soaked. Like that day, I was totally soaked. But it's always been, it feels like it's always been a space. And maybe this is quite a highbrow word in a roundabout way, but the notion of communion, like people coming together, has always felt like what the Roundhouse is. And then cheeky ad, I tried to get a job here many, many moons
ago. Tell me more about that.
And I didn't get it. Like basically, I guess essentially with what is the production outfit that exists now, which, you know, has a healthy alumni and young people coming in to kind of do production every week. I was trying to work at that, but I just didn't have enough experience, I would say. They were just like, yeah, he's a cool guy, but yeah, he's too young for this. But
well, that was, you're back now.
I know, in a different capacity as well. So yeah, it's always been a space that I associate with grand energy, community events. And yeah, the notion of what it houses, you always feel like it's a temple to some kind of big communion activity for everyone.
Absolutely. What about you, Ken?
He said my one.
What? Fusa Baruta.
Yeah, man. That one, that experience of just seeing that, or being it as a audience member in that space, standing up and being in that just round. Like you're just in there and you're just like, whoa. Like the ceiling is high. Mm-hmm. The space feels wide. And it just felt like what Mike said, a community feel, but it just felt like a social gathering. That performance, but also just the energy of the space. But for me, I think what's been really nice about the Roundhouse is just the welcoming the welcome of, and the energy of the space. It feels like it's about elevating and about mentorship and about progression.
Absolutely.
So it really aligns with what we do as a company. So yeah, it's a real appreciation to bring one of our pieces of work here.
And not to extend the question too much, but we've won some awards here. So we won the Sky Arts Award here because it was hosted here.
Oh, yeah.
And then I won the BIFRA Award for Kneecap here for Best Original Score. So,
wow.
Yeah. And that was all in like the same kind of year, I think, as well, which is pretty crazy.
So how did this specific opportunity come about? And what's the process and procedure for playing shows and being involved with an organization at this level?
How did we get?
I mean, it's a combination of a few things. Number one, just before COVID, we had been approached by Delia Barker, who was working here at the time, just in relation to kind of doing a live version of a show we had at the time called Black, White, Grey. And that was literally what it was going to be, an orchestrated version of the show directly, but then COVID. What it is from Marcus's point of view specifically, he always wanted to continue staying in contact with us to do something. So it was a multitude of conversations with Marcus and the rest of the team to kind of just continuing to discuss what could we do? What could we do? What could we do? Then the advent of the 360, because it was the inaugural last year, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
That kind of felt like the right thing to say, okay, actually, that feels like something we could curate. We could also support both, like Ken spoke about, in terms of our aligned interests in youth activities, that work in that process as well. So it was the festival that really kind of said, okay, we found the thing that we can all commune and talk around. So that was it, really.
Absolutely. Are you excited for it?
Very excited. Yeah. It's gonna be a vibe.
So you guys started Boy Blue back in 2001, is that right?
2001.
Yeah, so I wonder if you could tell me a little bit, and everybody listening, about your collective journey and how you've ended up here 25 years later.
Right, 25 years later. Well, me and Mikey went to school together.
Okay.
So we've known each other since 12. We've been, like, I would say, best of friends since 17, 18. And I would go and watch Mikey perform. So he was doing everything, triple threat, everything, yeah? Mm. So I went to watch him. And then from that, there's a space called Forest Gate Youth Centre. That's in Newham, East London. And I'll be playing basketball. And I said to Mikey, my brother, Kelroy at the time, there's dance there. Mm. So they would go upstairs, do dance. Mm. I'd be downstairs playing basketball. And then one day I went upstairs, got a feel of what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, okay, I'm locked in. But obviously Mikey was doing that beforehand. So he was already locked in before me.
locked in, innit?
So from that, the tenacity and the drive and the enthusiasm to keep on dancing. And I was talking to Mikey about it more. And it was like, Mikey was like, okay, I can see, Ken, you want to do this dance thing properly. Mm-hmm. So we had a group before Boy Blue called Matrix. And I would say that was like a bunch of friends that came together. And I mean, even after rehearsal, we walk for like 20 minutes, half an hour home, dropping everyone home and then eventually going our ways.
Amazing.
But it, and then from that energy brought them Boy Blue, which was this energy of, we now need to elevate. The young people in Newham were like, when are you going to start a youth company? Because we had our group Matrix. So we started a group called Trix. Mikey named it Trix, take out the MA and then you put a little sighting at the end. So we had that, and then we said, okay, we're going to put it all together. So 2001 was Boy Blue, the energy of this. We've done the Matrix, we've done the feel, we've got a feel of it, we've got a little reputation now. They know our faces, but now Boy Blue was this elevation, and now we're getting people from South London, people from North London, people from West London. As it's grown, we've got people from outside of London coming, from South Coast, from Manchester, from Birmingham. And literally, it has just been this ecosystem that has continuously grown and grown and grown into like tribes, into villages. And also with Mikey making that choice of stopping dancing, it has elevated him into a space of the knowledge that he has from the dance, from the theatre, from all the acting. He puts it into the music, which then has created what is this kingdom now of music and dance.
Because it's such a specific thing that if someone comes to a Boy Blue show, it's unparalleled to any other dance company in that sense, where I guess the not only the idea and the visual and the choreography, but the music and the mission and the community involved is so cohesive that you're all involved in every aspect of that production. Mikey, with the music, what's the genesis of that? At what stage does it come into the production? Like, how does it start and impact the dance?
It can do that literally. It could start it. I could have a set of tracks or a set of ideas, and then I will kind of present them in musical form to Ken to be like, Ken, what do you think about this? You know, and this is where I want to take it. Like this recent show, Cycles specifically, that's where it kind of came from. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew where the energy kind of lied in the idea of something that I wanted to be continuous, forward motion, propulsive. And that was a response to, I think, what was happening in the scene, where essentially a lot of the work now had been stretched or pulled out to kind of go, okay, this is what the work needs to be. And I was like, no, we're losing the pace and the energy of what hip hop's meant to stand out with. Mm-hmm. So my first instinct was to say, this is how it sounds. And so then I give it to Ken to be like, these are the energies. And in this specific one, I didn't have, say, Black, White, Grey. When making that, I had a real kind of visual aspect in my brain that I had to translate through mind maps, through pictures and all of the like. But with this one, it was a discovery. It was like, okay, I've got 70 tracks. Here's the 70 tracks. Jade, Ken, where are we at with these? Where do we feel? Where should we playlist them? Where should they be? I mean, I even had a want to release the mix before the tracks came out, but it got to the stage where it was like we couldn't make decisions right up to the end. So the music came out at the end of the process. But it became just like a curation session between us. Loads of pieces that didn't even make it. You know, because we've gone through them all. But then at the same time, yeah, it's just my language trying to kind of articulate to them, this is the feeling, this is the vibe, how do you respond?
So it's part of that Cycles project that's going to be on at the Roundhouse, correct? Can you tell us a bit about the iteration of it that people might see and what to expect?
So firstly, it's in the round.
Yeah.
Secondly, well, 270. Secondly, it's live. There'll be live music this time. So we're going to reinterpret the music in a live format. We haven't announced who our players are. Hopefully there could potentially be someone who's an alumni of the space. Fantastic. And definitely there's an international act that we're bringing across as well. So there's going to be that live element. And then, yeah, I guess the challenge then is over to Ken and the rest of the team specifically in presenting it in the round. I don't know if you want to add to
what's that. The specifics of challenge or excitement of using that space?
Well, I mean, firstly, I'm excited because we've been kind of flat on, even though we, from a staging point of view, we might face diagonals and stuff.
Sure.
But for this to be, feel like predominantly 360 or 270, however you want to call it, it's looking at angles, it's looking at direction. It might even, like, for someone who's seen the show already, you might get a completely different feel. We might look at this and go, actually, because we're in the round, we might have to take this whole section and place it stage right as opposed to stage left. Mm. It's looking at all those different key things. So it's really about preparing the dancers to transform.
And works perfectly for the concept of Cycles, I guess. Yep. It's like bang on the money. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the beauty of the piece, is that we really don't know what show you're going to see each time you watch it, because there is so much that is left to the dancer to kind of take ownership. Mm-hmm. So in this circumstance, yeah, you could just imagine there's more opportunity for it to be just as different, because no show date is exactly the same, because it changes with that cyclical energy of things being able to shift and move. That's the nature of what the show is meant to be. So it's a nice challenge.
Mm. Totally. I know that the exploration of social identity and cultural heritage is at the heart of your mission to succeed as an organization, but also, like the Roundhouse, the total support of young people who might be coming to terms with those topics in a very direct way. Have you seen the association of your young people with dance and with music provide an antidote or an escape to some of those tough realities?
Well, I mean, you align a question like that with just the notion of the arts and what the arts does as a thing, right, as an element. And it's so sad that you don't see many of those things being maintained, especially in forums like schools or like community centers. You know, I think about the Roundhouse in that way. It's like, I don't know, excuse me for not finding better words today, but it's like a massive youth center, you know, the idea that young people can come in, they can learn, they can take something and it can affect them in the real world. And the Roundhouse has an alumni to show that value is at the base of it, right? But then I guess from a hip-hop point of view, it's just the types of voices that tend to kind of gravitate to that piece of work. Because I believe any dancer, practitioner can find something inside hip-hop that would support what they're doing in any kind of form. But there is definitely a space that it allows. It feels more inclusive in that way, in terms of you can just rock up with some pair of trainers. You don't have to think about this specific piece of kit or this specific look or even your figure, right? What your figure might look like, where some of the other art forms do kind of create that barrier based upon those other things. So I think that's what it does as an art form in a better way. I wouldn't say totally like, you know, shunning any other art form, but I think it does that in a better way, that the access point is very, very low. And therefore, it allows a person to kind of gain those same things that they can get in the other art forms. But at the same time, it's at a lower price point, at a lower kind of, I guess, social cost, which does affect many, many people. Then there's the other part, which is, yes, you know, the styles, i.e. like a crump, when you look at it from its genesis, it was built in a way to settle the idea of specifically men at the time in Los Angeles, that energy of frustration and anger, the things that they might be going through. So yes, you do have that also, which means, you know, where rap is concerned or even graph or any of the other kind of pillars that exist, here is a space where you can get that frustration out and it's totally welcome, you know?
So in terms of that entry point you talk about, do you have people come to you sometimes that have never danced before but know that they want to try it out? And
Yep. I've in some of the youth centres that we've worked in, we've had people come, start dancing, and now they're doing it as a full-time career.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? People have changed their whole trajectory on what they wanted to do because of dance. We know people who've got married with another dancer, now they've got kids, they've got a family from this. Do you know what I mean? So there's no escape. Once you get into this feeling of dance and music and the arts, the way it grabs you is so different. Because there's certain dreams that we talk about, but now there's a passion that we could really activate and get on. And I think for me, especially, I started dancing when I was 18. Mm. I had no real sense of I want to be a dancer, but as soon as it grabbed me, I would bring in all my sports mentality with it. I was bringing my artistic, graphic and graphic design. I was bringing it all into the dance. Mm. So it's very transferable from a skills point of view. You can really bring all this in, and even academic, maths, English, geography, history, all of that is within the arts. Yeah. So so for a young person, I feel like, and this may sound political, the more that there's the arts going on from an academic point of view, is the more that it builds our young people to be stronger characters, because you're giving self-esteem, confidence, self-affirmation, self-reflection in all you're doing. You know what I mean? Did you do that routine well? No. So how do you make it better? Self-reflection. I want to be better. The want to gravitate to another level. Mm. So for what we do, and especially seeing the stuff that happens here at the Roundhouse, you can see that there is a space or like a portal for young artists to say, okay, this is what I want to do, and there is this space or there's this support that we can get.
I mean, I would add just two alumni people from Boy Blue as a good example. One who didn't have those dancing skills went on to, and his name is Mukta, he went on to choreograph 2 Super Bowls, the most recent ones you've seen.
No way.
And one other alumni, and he couldn't dance before. He's someone that came in, got taught, and he's taken it. He's done, you know, he works with Cirque, and he's taken it to that whole other level. And then, yeah, Cynthia Erivo. She obviously had mad talented, as you know.
Yeah.
But that's someone who worked with us and danced with us, so much so it was in the most recent interview that they mentioned about the opportunity they got from her for her ability to do movement because she had trained with us. So that's two examples of people that.
Wow, I had no idea she'd come through that program.
Well, not the program, just the vibe, the just vibe. The
just
energy.
The vibe.
Yeah. You know, I mean, she was just a dancer.
She was a dancer. Mm.
Yeah.
She was from the area. She wanted to dance.
Yeah.
And now she's taken it and she's gone to where she is
the
now.
Most physical performer as well. And
exactly.
That's clearly carried her so far. And you're doing a workshop as well, is that right? Around this time, is Project Revolution workshop that you're doing?
Yeah, so Project Revolution is literally a project. So we did a taster session and now we're just finalising auditions. So we're choosing 21 young artists between the age of, I think it's 18 to 25.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be doing I would say like a spin-off stroke, an influence stroke.
Yeah, they're going to work with the algorithm.
The algorithm of what Cycles is. So they're going to get a feel of what it is and they're going to be performing as part of a showcase that we're curating and as a curtain raiser for Cycles as well.
And then in conjunction with that, I will be supporting some of the production lot to provide the music and the sounds that might support that I guess by that time maybe it's we've done it, maybe we've made it, but yeah, their music will kind of help highlight or support the dance strand that we're creating with Project Revolution. Yeah.
And we're also having chats with the Poetry Collective as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
To get either some of them maybe performing in the piece or using some of their poetry as a stimulus to movement. So it's a real nice collaboration with Roundhouse.
Really cool. I know some of the poets, they're so talented and like just the nicest bunch of people. That's one of the really special things about the Roundhouse. There's so much in-house collaboration and people really lean on each other in a way that's really exciting. The dates, do you have the dates to hand? And if not, we can put them in.
So the performance days for Cycles is the 11th and the 12th of April.
Fantastic.
2026.
That's this year.
And then the performances for Project Revolution is going to be on the 12th. So there's an afternoon showcase that we're curating with some other stuff, and Boy Blue Dancers will be involved in that. Yeah. But then also there will be a curtain raiser before the Cycles performance as well.
Amazing. Well, I can only encourage anyone listening to get a ticket and check it out, because I think it's be a really special event. If there's anyone listening that sounds like they've been inspired to get involved with Boy Blue in any way, how do they find you? What's the method for that?
If they go to boyblue.co.uk, you can also find us on Instagram. I think it's the same, or there's an underscore in there or something like that. But just get in touch with us. We're always about doing intensive workshops. And we do a lot of education stuff because obviously we've got one of our pieces a part of the GCSE dance.
Yeah.
But we also have stuff that we do at colleges, universities. So we're always teaching workshops and doing modules and stuff like that. So yeah, heavily in the education. But if people just want to dance for the fun, we have intensives, we have open classes. So just, watch this space.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, guys. It's been a pleasure to chat to you.
That's what. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Kemrick and Michael for that conversation. I cannot wait to see their show on the 11th and the 12th of April. Grab your tickets now if you feel so inspired. The 360 Festival is all about the bringing together of young, emerging creatives. For one epic month, this festival will serve up a mix of music, spoken word, theatre, visual arts, podcasts, and club nights, with each event amplifying the voices of today's most vital and unapologetic artists. If you like what you've heard and want to be part of it, you can find full festival details, lineup information, and tickets over at roundhouse.org.uk. Whether you're planning your weekend or deciding what not to miss, everything you need to know is there. I think that's it for this episode, your sneak peek inside the Roundhouse 360 Festival. I've been Emmeline, a resident artist here at the Roundhouse, and thanks for listening. We hope to see you at the festival. Powered by Transmission Roundhouse.